No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello, welcome back to another West Coast Fanatics Wednesday. I'm Tyler. I'm the host of West Coast Fanatics, rolling solo today. Jake has a rescheduled game for his son for football today, so Jake will be live with Mike tomorrow. So I'm going to give my thoughts on the last week of Milwaukee Brewer games, as well as last week's Badger game against South Dakota and the upcoming Badger football game against Alabama. So just me today, but you will get Jake and Mike tomorrow, so you will still be able to hear all three of us and our thoughts going into the weekend.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatic Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so like I said, just me today. Jake and Mike will be live tomorrow at the same time. But I'm still going to go through the last game of the Cardinals series, the three-game Rockies series, and the first game of the Giants series that took place in San Francisco last night. So looking at those five games over the last week, my power pair this week includes William Contreras, who was 6-for-17. That's a .375 batting average. He had a home run, scored three runs, and drove in three runs. For the pitcher, I went with Tobias Myers. He threw a six-inning, one-earned-run gem with a career-high 11 strikeouts, so that was great to see. That'll be one of the games I talk about. And then my underrated performer, I went with Isaac Collins. I just wanted to give Isaac Collins a shout-out for getting a single and stealing a base in his first big league at-bat. So good for him. Very excited to see it, and obviously it's always a really exciting thing and really enjoyable thing to watch families react when guys are getting their first call-ups and getting their first big league hits and such. So, okay, jumping in, starting with Cardinals Game 3 from last week, the Brewers did end up losing this one. This ended 10 games in 9 days, a pretty long stretch. But I do think the Brewers in this stretch focusing on rest. The offense was a little slow. It happens. I don't think there's too much need to put too much emphasis on these games, but we can start to think about the postseason roster. So I think that's something that as we get into, especially like the bullpen, that's going to be the conversations that are being had here. So looking at the top of the first inning, the first two bases loaded walks, those are the first two bases loaded walks of Colin Ray's career. Not just the season, of Colin Ray's career. That was the first two times that Colin Ray had ever walked in runs with the bases loaded. Took him a 30-pitch first inning. He rebounded well for a 7-pitch second and a short 4-inning start. Threw 75 pitches. Now, this is going to be a theme where guys aren't necessarily going into high pitch counts but are still being pulled what you would call, quote-unquote, early. He gave up 4 hits, 2 walks, had 4 strikeouts, gave up 2 earned runs, and this is where, like I said, I think the Brewers were focusing more on rest. D.L. Hall came in to piggyback on Colin Ray, and he was stellar. He had 4 innings pitched, no hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts on 68 pitches. His curveball was beautiful. His changeup was good. His fastball was good. His slider was good. Just a really, really good piggyback from D.L. Hall to come in relief of Colin Ray, and I think they're going to continue using him in that manner as they have to this point. Now, his fastball was up 1.7 miles an hour from his season average. His slider was up 2.3 miles an hour over his season average. His curveball was up 0.9 miles an hour, and his changeup was up 1.6 miles an hour. So DL Hall's velocity was up, which is very encouraging to see. And the spin was up on all three by a little bit. not a crazy amount that his slider was up as far as break is concerned or his spin, but he located very well, very, very well in this appearance, and he was throwing hard. So very good signs for sure relating to DL Hall. Now, Eric Haas did have a 109.6 mile an hour exit velocity, 438-foot home run in this game. Honestly, my thing with Eric Haas is it's impressive how well he stays ready despite sparing playing time. So really cool to see Eric Haas have that home run in this game as well. This game was also a little bit of a struggle, as I kind of previously mentioned, for the offense. 0-for-15 with runners in scoring position it's a tough day at the office, but again, it doesn't define the team because they've had sustained success in that area during this season. So again, it happens, but it is what it is. Devin Williams did have a nice and easy ninth inning, 17 pitches, 1-2-3. Could have been less pitches, but still a good appearance for him. Now we get to the 10th inning and we have extra innings again. And Yoel Piams gets a loss. Somebody has to, somebody has to be, charged with the loss for the game because of, the way Major League Baseball is. And this is just another one of those reasons where I don't put a ton of stock into wins and losses as far as starting pitchers are concerned. So the run that scored was the ghost runner. He did get two outs on four pitches, and then the Brewers intentionally walked Nolan Arenado. So I don't really think that Yoel Piams necessarily did anything wrong in his appearance, but it just, like I said, somebody has to get the loss. It is what it is. Unfortunately, this was another in a long string of games where there was inconsistent umpiring, but it's just the way it goes sometimes, and you just have to be able to adjust to it. And the Brewers just didn't have their stuff that day, so it is what it is. And again, as we near the postseason, they are starting to prioritize rest more than trying to win every single game. Not saying that they're not trying to win, but again, they're prioritizing rest to prepare for the playoffs. Going into the Rocky series, game one, this one was really all about the pitching. The Brewers lost their second straight game, 3-2, and their third loss in a row, but I will come back to that for game two. Frankie Montas was cruising through four innings pitched. Only two base runners he allowed were a walk in the first and a walk in the fourth. He was at 60 pitches, had seven strikeouts, had nine strikeouts through five innings. He did give up a home run in the sixth with two on and two outs. That was really the only blemish that there was on the record of Frankie Montas last week against the Rockies. He had the three walks, which I've talked to with Jake a lot about. Jake is a stickler for walks. Looking at the three walks, only one of them scored. So, limiting the impact that those have. And he did finish with 10 strikeouts. So I think all in all, still a pretty good start from Frankie Montas, even though he did get the loss as well. For him to have 10 strikeouts and three walks and to go six innings on 94 pitches is impressive. You figure that many walks and strikeouts, that's essentially 13 at-bats that are going to the end of the at-bat, whether it's balls or strikes. To keep a pitch count low in that situation is exactly what we want to see out of Freddie Peralta. We know that Freddie Peralta's pitch count runs up high because he is a strikeout pitcher, and sometimes he does draw, the higher pitch counts because that's what he plays to, because that's what his strengths are. So seeing Frankie Montas do that, it's really like, okay, can we teach Freddie Peralta how to do that? Can we teach Freddie Peralta how to go six innings with 10 Ks on 94 pitches, even if he has three walks? So that was really, really cool to see by Frankie Montas. And honestly, like I said, if that's something we can teach Freddie Peralta, that would be a big benefit. Then we have Aaron Ashby. Fantastic. Again, just whatever it happened that when he became a reliever, he became dominant and had all of his command locked down. His command was great again. He pitched three innings, only gave up one hit, no walks, and had four strikeouts. Now, looking at the Brewers offense, again, two runs. It's another not great day for the offense, but looking at it, seeing the flip side of it, just taking the perspective, the Brewers had four hits. All four hits came from the 7, 8, 9 hitters in the order. So, yes, it the focus is going to tend to be, oh, that means the top of the order sucked. But it also means that the bottom of our order is capable. So there's, again, there's just a shift in perspective there that, you know, can go to being a positive thing. Dan, what's up? Rolling solo today. I actually fired Mike and Jake and Simon and Bryant. This is now the Wisco Fanatic podcast. I'm just kidding. Mike and Jake are going to be live tomorrow. So they will be live at the same time tomorrow. I'm just sticking with a normal show today. Their Brewers, although only the four hits, they did also draw five walks. Churio had two of them. Bowers had two of them. And then Perkins had one. So still nine base runners. But obviously, the consensus is going to be you're playing the Rockies. You should beat them every single time. And again, if everything happens the way that it should on paper, nobody would watch sports because they'd already know what's going to happen. Going into game two, though, we game two, the Brewers did win, snapped their losing streak of three. Still the only team in Major League Baseball to not lose four games in a row, which is crazy. It's really just a crazy thing to go this many games through the season and still not lose four games in a row. I think that is arguably the thing that legitimizes the Brewers the most, because they don't let themselves go on losing streaks. That's going to be beneficial in a series. Obviously, that you lose four and you're done, but the Brewers being able to stop those things and then get back to winning, I think, is a big notch in their favor. Dan said it's about time you fired those guys. Hashtag deadweight, hashtag just playing, hashtag much love. Yeah. I've told Jake before I could host this show by myself, but I don't want to. So the offense, I'm going to give a sliver of credit to William Contreras on Willy Adames' home run. Now, in this game, the bottom of the first inning, William Contreras works an 11-pitch at-bat that ends in a groundout. So why am I giving credit to him for Willy Adames' home run? Because after that 11-pitch marathon of an at-bat, Willy Adames jumps on the first pitch that he sees and hits number 30. So I wanted to give William Contreras some credit just for getting ahead and getting through a long at-bat and then catching Black trying to get ahead of Willy Adames by throwing a strike, and Willy Adames just jumped on it immediately and gave the Brewers a 1-0 lead. Gary Sanchez followed that with back-to-back home runs. Very exciting to see that. And then also later on in the game, William Contreras then hit a home run. And I have to give credit to Jake. Jake has talked about it a lot with the Brewers playing consistently with power makes them very dangerous. And to his credit, you know, obviously you can say things like that as blanket statements about anybody, but if the Brewers add that element consistently, it makes them extremely dangerous and a team that is capable of going on a deep playoff run. So that's exciting to see. Hopefully more of it continues. Looking at Tobias Myers, this was the Tobias Myers gem game, and apparently it's just the Rockies that bring out the best in Tobias Myers, and it doesn't matter if it's on the road or at home. Tobias Myers did a really good job of getting out of the first and third with nobody out in the top of the second inning, doing a really good job. Seven strikeouts through three innings was crazy. He had a 63% called strike or whiff rate on his fastball. Now, this is the best rate over for players who threw 25 fastballs this season, and the fourth best since tracking began in 2006. That is the highest rate of called strikes or swinging and missing strikes on fastballs specifically. And then Tobias Myers, in games pitching the day after a loss, has pitched 13 times, 12 starts. He has a 7-2 record with a 1.84 ERA, a 1.83 opponent batting average, and a 0.88 whip. So Tobias Myers, he is the stopper. Tobias Myers is the stopper. A very good job of him as well in the starting. Career-high 11 strikeouts. He had 19 whiffs, 19 swing and misses. That is insane. Awesome. All of the good things. Tobias Myers was absolutely fantastic. Any of the good words you can think to say about Tobias Myers, he deserves them for this game. His command was A1. He had his best stuff going. Again, any good words you can think to say about Tobias Myers in the second game of the Rocky series, he deserves them. Looking at the bullpen, trying Jared Koenig for two innings was a choice. Michael said sign Myers to an extension. Myers Leonard, that's a different spelling of Myers. I'm just messing with you, Mike. I would sign him to extension. I would sign him to the exact same extension as Aaron Ashby. Looking at Jared Koenig, this is one of those times where, like, I don't question Pat Murphy too often, but this is one that I would question. Trying Jared Koenig for two innings just seemed like not the best idea. He did give up a solo home run in the eighth inning, but he hasn't pitched more than one inning since June 28th. And on that day, he pitched an inning and a third. He hasn't pitched two full innings since June 11th. So I don't know if Pat Murphy was maybe trying something, like if they're looking at trying to use fewer relievers, but seeing if they can stretch them out. You know, like obviously they've done this with Brian Hudson the entire season. Obviously you can see that they're doing it with Joe Ross and DL Hall and Bryce Wilson. Those guys are the multi-inning relievers. I don't know if they were just trying to see if that's something they could do with Jared Koenig. So if they say get five innings out of a starter in the playoffs and you put two guys in for two innings each after that, if you can potentially have it so you have more players available by the day, as opposed to getting five innings from your starter and then using four pitchers to get through the next four innings. So I don't know if that's maybe what they were trying to go for there, but didn't love the choice to try to put Jared Koenig out there for two innings. Other than that, Devin Williams is so tough. He is insane. He is obviously a two-time reliever of the year for a reason. We talk about how much his we don't talk enough about how much his fastball and changeup look the same when they come out of his hand. It almost identical, like the release, the extension, like the way that he throws it. Everything is almost the exact same. And then there's like a 12-mile-an-hour difference in speed and obviously a massive difference in the break that these two pitches have. It has to just be a nightmare trying to guess. He has two pitches, but it's still hard to figure out what he's going to do and adjust to it as they're coming towards you. And you have a split second to figure out which one it is and determine a 12-mile-an-hour difference between the two. Dennis said he hasn't missed a beat since he's been back. I mean, kind of. Like, he might miss a couple beats, but he's still rolling. You know, I think some of the beats that he's potentially missed are just maybe going back-to-back days a little bit too much or maybe throwing a few too many pitches, but that's less on him than it is on the usage of him. I don't think it was ever a problem that anything that Devin Williams was doing. I think it's just he's put in this situation and they're giving him an opportunity. I don't think it was anything that Devin Williams did that ever made him, quote-unquote, miss a beat. So he's been very, very good. The swing and misses that he got on his changeup, not even close. It's insane. Like I said, he's got two pitches. You have a 50-50 chance of guessing right what pitch he's going to throw to you, and guys still just wave at pitches that their bat ends up being 16 to 18 inches away from the ball. It's really incredible, and we're lucky to have him. Before I move on to game three, I have to give the Rockies some credit because their outfield defense is insane. Their infield defense is really, really iffy, really shaky, but their outfield defense is insane. They showed the range in all three of these games here. And going into game three, I already mentioned Isaac Collins as my underrated performer this week for his first at-bat. Gets a single, steals second base right away. Love to see that. Then after that, the Brewers final 23 batters were all retired in order. And out of those 23 at-bats, only one of them had over a 200 expected batting average, which was an Andrew Monasterio lineout in the bottom of the fifth. That's just one of those, like, baseball things. It's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And obviously, again, we've talked about the Brewers. They're starting to focus on the postseason. Michael said he disagreed. Williams has had a few walks, and I still love him and glad he's our closer, but he hasn't been exactly shut down every outing. And that's never been, you know, he's never been shut down every single time all the time, but it's his ability to deal with traffic and still win games. And that's the thing that Jake comes back to a lot is, did we win? Yes. Okay, he did his job. And like I said, I don't think it's been anything where he's doing anything wrong. It's just some days he doesn't have the command that he does when he's at his best. And nobody's 100% of their best all the time, every single day. You know, Shohei Ohtani has days where he goes 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. It happens. So nobody is their best 1,000% of the time, 100% of the time, every single time. Everybody's going to have their ups and downs. But overall, if we're looking at Devin Williams since he's returned, he's been very good. So very excited for Isaac Collins in game 3. Freddy Peralta, not a horrible game, but his pitch count was getting up a little bit in the fifth inning. And then the home run hung 2 more runs on him, which was given up by Hobie Milner in the fifth inning. It's tough, but Hobie Milner and Elvis Aguero are in similar situations. And right now they can't be relied on with two runners or with runners on base. It's tough. And like I said in the beginning of the show, that we're starting to get to a point where the losses aren't, these backbreaking losses. Obviously, we still would like to have one of the top two seeds, but I don't think the NL Central is in any sort of jeopardy. So I think the Brewers are just preparing to be ready for the playoffs, whether they're a top two seed or the three seed, and have to play an opening round game or a series, That said, if we're looking at what the postseason roster could eventually look like, it's getting harder and harder to imagine Hobie Milner and Elvis Aguero being on it, which is unfortunate because we like them. They're good pitchers. They have good stuff. Just has been a bad year for both of them as far as inherited runners are concerned. So hopefully they can work out of it. There's still a handful of games to go in the season, still about 20 games to go, I think 19 games maybe. But right now, it's just the bottom line. You just can't trust them with runners on. It's just how it is. Like I said, hopefully they can work out of it, but it did hurt them in that Rocky series. Okay, going to last night's game. Brewers back on the win column last night. Another 3-2 game, this one that came out on the winning end. Aaron Civale, pretty decent start. 5 1/3, 3 hits, 1 walk, 2 Ks, 2 earned runs, only 68 pitches. So going back to what I said about Colin Ray in the third game of the Cardinals series, he was pulled after only 74 pitches, I believe it was. Again, it just seems to be that the Brewers are looking at some of these starters and giving them, like, quote-unquote, like, take-it-easy starts. But Aaron Civale was pretty good, I think. He was 48 out of 68 on strikes, so only 20 balls. That's pretty good. And then out of 20 batters faced, he had 13 first-pitch strikes. That's 65%. That's a pretty good number as well. Looking again, this is DL Hall again in relief. Inning in 2/3, no hits, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. Trevor McGill came in, got a really quick 1-2-3 eighth inning, took only 7 pitches. His velocity was down a little bit, about 2 miles an hour, so that's something I'm going to keep an eye on, whether it's environmental conditions or usage, or if he's just got some fatigue, which at this point of the season everybody has. So I'm going to keep an eye on Trevor McGill's velocity going forward. Then Devin Williams, he gave up a leadoff single in this game. It was a soft ground ball, so it wasn't like he gave up, this big booming home run or like a double to the gap or anything like that. It was a soft ground ball. Willy Adames just yanked the throw a little bit as he made like a spinning play on a ball that he was able to get to. I'm not saying that Willy Adames should be.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Charged with an error or anything like that. It's just one of those things was just a little bit outside of the reach that Willie Adames had to try to make a really quick spinning throw, and it pulled Bowers off the base. Then the only other thing that I really have from this game is Joey Ortiz being called out at home plate. And originally he was called out, and after review, he was still called out. And I really thought he was safe. It really looked like his hand was under the glove, under the tag. And this is something where I believe the NFL started doing this as far as their replays are concerned. They just started calling everything scores and then reviewing them because they're automatically reviewed. So I was going to present this thought, a line of thought to Jake, is if Major League Baseball should just start calling players safe, if it's questionable, obviously I'm not saying to call everybody safe, but if it's a close play, a bang-bang play, call them safe and then review it. Especially if they want scoring to be up as a result of using replay. Because if that play is called safe and then reviewed, it probably stands. But because he was called out and then it was reviewed, it stood as an out. So this is just something where, you know, maybe the tendency is to call them safe until the play is reviewed and then overturn it to an out if they can see that there is an out. Just a thought there. But looking at the Brewers, they do have more games coming up. They have two more games in San Francisco. Jake, being on tomorrow, is going to go through tonight's game, and then I will give some brief thoughts on it next Wednesday when we start the show. Other than that, three at the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then they have the first two against the Philadelphia Phillies at home starting next week, Thursday, I believe. Oh, no. That doesn't make sense. They have two more. Then they have two at home against Philly Monday, Tuesday. And then they have the third game is going to be Wednesday night. I don't know why I was thinking Thursday. So that's what we'll have next week for Brewers games. Other than that, I'm going to switch to Badgers football. All right. So looking at Badgers football, looking at the defense, my task on defense is to look at the linebackers. Jake is covering the defensive line, and Mike covers the secondary. So today you can hear from me about the linebackers. Tomorrow, Jake and Mike will talk about the defensive line and the secondary. So today you get the middle from me, and you can get the front and the back tomorrow with Jake and Mike. But for me, looking at the linebackers against South Dakota, have to tackle better. Bottom line. The first play, Thomas and Chaney missed on what would have been like a 5 to 6 yard gain. That became a 25 yard gain. Overall, Jake Chaney missed 3 tackles on the game. The Badgers total had 14 missed tackles. That is extremely high and just a number that really, really needs to come down. 14 missed tackles, got to tackle better. Next, Aaron Witt and Christian Allegro are showing some good defense against the run. So I know a lot of concern this week was about the Badgers' run defense. I think Christian Allegro and Aaron Witt have shown that they are capable of defending the run. And I'm not saying that they need to play over Jaheim Thomas or Jake Chaney, but they might be deserving of having a few more snaps come their way. Looking at Witt, Thomas and Chaney, the three of them did do a really good job of recognizing a screen out of a jumbo set at one point as well. I will say I think the linebackers delivered better pressure on pass plays this week than they did in week one. And Chaney ended up on a wide receiver versus a play action pass. Don't want to see that super often. But several defenders overcommitted versus the run. That's just a good play call by South Dakota. I will say a good adjustment by Tressel to go with a single high safety midway through the third quarter and put another guy in the box. That was an adjustment that I do think probably going to be used more often against Alabama. Then we get to Jake Chaney's targeting call. Now, I am in a group chat with Jake and Mike. And I know when this play happened, they were upset. They believed that it was a football play and Chaney shouldn't have been targeted for targeting. But it was targeting, unfortunately, because he put his head into the chest of the receiver. only thing he needs to do on that play is to just turn his head. That's it. Just the fact that he went straight down with his helmet, unfortunately, does make that a targeting call. So Jake Chaney will miss the first half against Alabama. It's unfortunate. It is what it is. But I do think it was the right call to call that a targeting penalty. Now, after that, after Jake Chaney was ejected, Tackett Curtis came into the game wearing the green dot. So that was interesting to see that they're essentially giving the transfer in, the new guy, the young guy on the team, as far as linebackers are concerned, the green dot. He did a good job filling in for Jake Chaney. And he's another guy in the linebacking room that I think is going to earn himself some more playing time. He was flying around sideline to sideline, making plays against the pass and the run. Very excited to see the opportunity that Tackett Curtis is going to get in the first half against Alabama. Now, again, it's a tall task. We know that. And there's no Jake Chaney, who is one of the best players in the defense. But I'm excited for the opportunity for Tackett Curtis. Last thing on the linebackers against South Dakota. Overall, I think they have some work to do on tackling and gap responsibility, but they are showing some good linebacker play with the ability to still be better. So I know I've talked about this group being a super deep group, and I still believe that that's the case. Obviously, I'm talking about all of these players who are making plays. It's a deep group. It really is. And all of the guys have shown something at some point in the first two games. So I'm excited to see more. And it's the more that we're going to see is against a really, really good team. That said, looking at the offense against South Dakota, my charge on the offensive side of the ball is the passing game. Mike has the running game and Jake covers the offensive line as well as special teams. For me, looking at the pass game, second play of the game, Tyler Van Dyke rolls to his right and hits Vinny Anthony for 32 yards on an absolute dime. Jake and I are going to do some more play breakdowns this week from the South Dakota game before we get to the Alabama game. And this play, seeing him rolling to his right and throwing an absolute dime, there is some encouragement on my part of what I'm seeing from Tyler Van Dyke compared to Tanner Mordecai and Braden Locke last year. Tyler Van Dyke has the arm talent. It's absolutely there. The first third down that they had started with five wide. They did eventually bring Jackson Aker back into the backfield, but a really good concept of the routes. And again, this is going to be one of the plays that we break down. A really good concept that ended up with a 22-yard gain to Bryson Green. I'm really looking forward to breaking that play down with Jake because I love the concept that they ran on that play. Then we get to the touchdown. Beautiful touchdown to CJ Williams. And this is fantastic play design and perfect execution. This is what we are going to need if we have a chance to beat Alabama. But there's a lot of people that were complaining about Phil Longo through the first 2 weeks. This play right here tells me that he knows what he's doing. And say what you want about it being a one-play sample size, that's true. But you can see these flashes where it's like, oh, okay, like they're starting to figure it out a little bit. And when the play calling, the design, and the execution come together, I think there is potential for Wisconsin to be a very good football team. And that is where I believe that the potential exists for the Badgers to upset Alabama. And again, it's going to take essentially perfection of the play call, the play design, and the execution. All three of those things are going to have to be married for the Badgers to beat Alabama. And I'm not saying that's what I'm predicting. I will get into my score predictions in a little bit. But these flashes that I'm seeing in these first 2 weeks do give me some hope that I do believe that it's possible for the Badgers to upset Alabama. Other than that, I believe Tyler Van Dyke, like I said, after the win over Western Michigan, I think he makes good RPO decisions. Not just when to pass, but also when to hand the ball off. You know, that's something where you look at RPOs and you say, sure, it's good to know when to pull the ball down and pass, but to be the quarterback and know when to let the running back have the ball, that's Tyler Van Dyke making good decisions. Also, when the offensive line is better, Tyler Van Dyke has more time to throw and he's able to let plays develop. I think he just gets better as well. And saw multiple times where Tyler Van Dyke was able to let plays develop and Will Pauling was able to get behind the linebackers and in front of the safeties And that is where Will Polling is dangerous. And again, if the Badgers are able to hold their offensive line and stymie the pass rush of Alabama to a point and let these plays develop, again, I think there exists the ability for the Badgers to upset Alabama again if everything is married together, including the execution. So I will say, on the other side of the coin, Tyler Van Dyke needs a little bit of touch. There's definitely some plays in this game where there's some throws close to the line of scrimmage that Tyler Van Dyke overthrew, and not in a distance sense of the word overthrew, but just throwing rockets. So maybe Tyler Van Dyke, a little bit of work on the touch and in the strength, not distance area of overthrows. Overall, I don't really have a ton of problems with the Badgers beating South Dakota by 14. I'm not worried about how they perform against the spread. They were favored by like 15.5. They won by 14. Like, there's way too much concern, in my opinion, that the Badgers aren't doing enough. And personally, I don't know if Jake and Mike will agree with this when they talk about it tomorrow. I do think this team looks better overall than last year's team did. There's a lot of people thinking that this team doesn't look better than last year's team. And I think too many people are expecting too much of an improvement. They're like, they're expecting a night and day difference from last year to this year. And I'm looking for more marginal improvements, and I'm looking for game to game improvements. And that's going to lead me to the Alabama game. And again, I'm not looking for the Badgers to dominate Alabama or to simply win. I'm looking for the Badgers to be competitive. And obviously they're playing a top five team, so there are expectations there that Alabama is going to be favored to win by a fair amount, probably. Again, I don't care about the spreads, so I don't know what it is. That said, Big Noon kickoff is coming to Madison this week, which is very exciting. That's a good exposure opportunity for the city of Madison and for potential recruits. There are a couple of recruits that I'm sure Mike knows the exact names of that are coming to visit Madison this weekend. So for them to be able to see Big Noon kickoff in Madison, I think is a point in favor of Madison. Now, looking at the Badgers defense against Alabama. Yes, Alabama scored 42 points last week, but they scored 28 points in the fourth quarter last week, and 21 of those 28 points came in the final 6 minutes of the game. So they were held essentially through 54 minutes of this game to 21 points, and through 45 minutes of the game held to 14 points by USF. Mike asked, is there a theory that the Badgers have held back some things to unleash on Alabama? The theory definitely exists. Like, there's definitely people that think that the Badgers, you know, run just simple offense to not, you know, give away everything they have in their playbook. I think there's probably a sliver of truth to that, but I don't think it's like half the playbook or anything like that. I think if there are a couple things that they were keeping a little closer to the chest to use against Alabama, it's maybe a couple plays, not a couple pages of plays, in my opinion. But we'll see. We'll see what happens if they mix little things up. One thing that I mentioned from last week to this week that I would like to see more of is I want to see Tyler Van Dyke in more RPO situations. So I'll get to that when I get to the passing game segment on the offensive side of the ball. But looking at the defensive side of the ball, no Jake Chaney in the first half, so it is officially Tackett Curtis season, at least for the first half of this game. He definitely earned himself some more playing time with how he played in the absence of Chaney against South Dakota. And he's going to get it immediately. In the game against South Dakota last week, he had 4 run stops in limited playing time. That led the team. So Tackett Curtis, very, very excited to watch him play. Regardless of what happens on the scoreboard, I'm excited to watch Tackett Curtis play. The outside linebackers, those guys have to keep their contain on Jaden Milroe. He is a very good runner. He wants to run about 10 times a game, and he can run. However, he can be turned over. He had 13 fumbles in 2023. He has 3 already in 2024. Contain first, then attack the ball, and the same goes for their running back, Jamarion Miller. So between Tackett Curtis and Jaheim Thomas and eventually Chaney, they will need to be keyed in on Jalen Milroe And I think that maybe Allegro maybe gets a little bit more playing time after the first two games, making an impact in limited snaps. So that's what I'm looking at for the linebackers against Alabama. As far as offense goes, looking at the passing game against Alabama, I'm going to be looking at, as far as the offense is concerned, especially against South Dakota, I think playing in the lead, playing with a lead in the second half, the Badgers did keep it basic. So to your point, Mike, of the question of are they keeping anything, I think in the second half they were kind of just running the ball, killing some clock, and I think you can add some of that in as far as time of possession is concerned when you bring in the fact that they brought in freshman running backs and also a backup left tackle. That to me just said they were kind of just trying to get the game over. Now, South Dakota did have a lot of time of possession, so that is part of it. I did see some more wrinkles of the RPO in the first half after seeing just a couple in week one. So if that trend continues, I would love to see Wisconsin keep the RPO going. Maybe for all 60 minutes, probably not ever going to be all 60 minutes of the game, but to keep that as part of the game plan during all 60 minutes. I'm not saying to run RPO on every single play. That's never going to happen. You're going to have designed passes and designed runs. But I like what I've seen from Tyler Van Dyke as far as decision-making and playmaking in RPO situations has gone so far. So I am on board for more of that. Late in the game, milking clock, Wisconsin are showing that they can use the pass game to possess the ball as well and not just run, and punt if they don't get a first down. Using a guy like Will Pauling in that aspect is a big asset, and I look forward to more of that. I think that is another thing that is potentially different from last year. The Badgers are able to possess the ball with the pass. They're able to have, you know, a second and six and get a six-yard pass play. Not looking for anything flashy down the field, but being able to continue possessing the ball, continue running the clock with the passing game, that is a next-level thing, in my opinion, for the Badgers. Go back as far as you want to. I think that's an asset for the Badgers, and I think that's a new thing that they're developing. And then in the passing game, just keep spreading the ball around. This is something I talk about with the Packers. It's one of the segments that I cover every Tuesday. 24 passes last week for Tyler Van Dyke. Seven different players had two or more targets. Eight players had receptions. So keep spreading the ball around. Very excited to see what else the Badgers can cook up in the offense. And like I said, I'm on board for more RPOs. Looking at X factors, mine is still Mike Tressel. Looking back on the defense, looking for Mike Tressel to dial up different looks to keep Jaden Milroe from getting comfortable in the run game or the pass game. And like I said, as covering the linebackers, keep them contained, similarly to how the Packers did against Jalen Hurts. Not to keep bringing up the Packers, but the Packers, they kept contained with their front four and were able to keep Jalen Hurts from making too big of an impact in the running game. That's what I would like to see the Badgers do against Jalen Milroe. Next, my keys against Alabama is to win the field position battle. Now, this isn't going to be, some big sexy, like, oh, if the Badgers can score a long touchdown or something like that. Like, I'm looking at the field position battle because I think seeing how South Dakota was able to use it against Wisconsin, it made things tougher for the Badgers. And seeing South Dakota being able to set themselves up for a chance to upset the Badgers by starting their drives around the 35-yard line and the Badgers having to start around the 20 or sometimes even farther back. So I think there's an opportunity there for the Badgers if they can win the field position battle, that is just another thing that can help them potentially pull off an upset. So for me, looking at my score predictions this week, my score prediction from the head, I do have 30-17 Alabama. Now, I'm going to preface this. I've spent the last half an hour saying that I think there's ways the Badgers can beat Alabama. I absolutely think the Badgers can beat Alabama. But going the more analytical route, I do think Alabama is going to win. It's a top five team versus a team who's in the second year of a new coaching staff. And now I get that Alabama is in the new coaching staff as well after Nick Saban retired. But the Badgers are in the middle of a program overhaul as far as the football program is concerned. So I do think Alabama is still going to win this game. but I do think the Badgers have a chance. There's a lot of people that are basically writing off the Badgers as having zero chance. I'm never going to say a team has zero chance. Northern Illinois just beat Notre Dame last week. So, I mean, everybody has a chance. My dad asked, is field position the way to upset somebody, or is taking your wrist once in a while a way to upset them? I mean, I think field position is just another way to help yourself by making your opposing offense have to go farther to score points. AFM said, David Gilreath. Good times. Good times. From the heart. On the score predictions, I have 31-30 Wisconsin. Either way, I have Alabama scoring 30 points. My dad said submitting zingers. Yeah, yeah. that's where we're at. I do, like I said, I'm not writing off the Badgers having zero chance to beat Alabama. I think, again, they have to marry everything and they have to play essentially almost a perfect game to be able to do so. But I do think it's possible. And again, at the RPO situation on offense, I think it's possible. Seeing the linebackers getting better over the first 2 weeks, I think is encouraging, even without Jake Chaney in the first half due to his targeting penalty. So I think it's possible. We'll see what happens. And we have more Brewer games coming up between now and next week. And again, I am solo today because I fired everybody. Just kidding. Because Jake and Mike have some stuff going on. So they are going to be live tomorrow. AFM said he's already sick of our clap snap. That's a college football thing. I don't know. I think it's something where eventually they'll do the clap and they'll try to get opposing teams to jump off sides and get a free play out of it at some point. I don't know. It's a college thing. It is what it is. Whatever. Dak Prescott says, here we go every time he snaps the ball. So that could be worse. But I will be back next week with Jake and Mike on Wednesday, as well as Tuesday night with Simon and Bryant for the Packers show. And if you are subscribed to us on Patreon, we will be live. It'll be just Mike and I on Saturday. We will have a 30-minute pregame show before Wisconsin and Alabama, and then we'll be watching the game together on Patreon. So if you are interested in watching some games with us, you can check us out on Patreon over there. We're doing 2 watch parties a month. And the patrons get to vote on the ones that we cover next month. Alabama and Wisconsin was the highest picked game of the month of September. So Mike and I will be live on Saturday for that with a brief post-game show. So come check us out over there and tune in to see Jake and Mike talk tomorrow on their thoughts on the Brewers and the Badgers. And I will see you everybody Saturday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Have a good one.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.